Very good. So this is the first morning Dhamma talk. Last night, just setting a bit of a scene. Setting the scene, not making a scene. Sorry. For just basically how to meditate. This is how you got on there? Is it working? Hi. Is it working, Christina? Yes, very good, okay. And so, here we're going to the heart of what Buddhism is all about. In other words, learning how to make the mind still. And when it becomes still, and not only do you get enormous health benefits, you get happiness benefits, and also you start to see, you know, Dhamma. Ooh. The truth. It's time for... No, no. So it's echoing there. So... is that right? Okay, yeah, I think so. So that our problem is, that sometimes when we're meditating, it's sometimes hard to actually to get some peace and some stillness. And without that peace and stillness, the energies go down, the health goes down, the wisdom goes down, the happiness goes down, and of course it's very difficult to see what needs to be done. But the path of meditation we're teaching here, slow but sure, gently going deeper and deeper and deeper into meditation. We start with our awareness of the body. It's amazing just how things change. There's nothing to see. I'm supposed to be listening. Anyway, we start with being aware of our body. And the reason why I like to get people aware of their body to begin with is simply because that human beings, for the most part, are more sensitive to their bodily feelings than to what's happening inside their mind. And it's also what you can find out, that as you experience the body, you can also see that much of the tension, the tightness, the tiredness, or the exuberance, whatever, it's linked to the mental state. It's as if there is a connection there between your mind and the body. So learning about your mind, you can learn... So learning about your body, you can then learn about your mind and overcome these amazing things. I don't know how many of you have seen hypnosis. You don't know hypnosis? Well, the next 6 or 7 days, I am going to brainwash you. Sitting, you know, it's actually, apparently I learned that it's one of the best ways of hypnotizing people, getting them very peaceful, meditating first of all, so they get very calm and still, and that's when speaking slowly you can get underneath. The thing is, I'm not malicious enough. I would never actually just exploit people. I need just to make people, make sure they are good people and do good things. But we can actually see, first of all, that hypnosis, that time, remembering back from when I was a student, just getting this man, or just the hypnotist at the time, I still remember his name, Dr. Tony Cornell. He became sort of a friend of ours. And later on, that he hypnotized this fellow, and a student, and he got the nail on the end of the piece of wood, and he hypnotized it. This nail is red hot. It's red hot. He hypnotizes this student to actually believing, and he touched the nail on the student's skin, and a student screamed in pain. And I can understand that. But then what happened, what really amazed to see, is a blister come up. The skin was wounded. There was a trauma visible. A blister, a burn appeared. And that nail was only sort of at room temperature. You could put it on a baby's skin and it wouldn't sort of hurt it at all. So what was happening there? The power of the mind to actually to create a wound on the body. And of course, once you see things like that with your own eyes, then the inference is, well, if a state of mind can create a wound, why not a state of mind take away a wound? Take away a tumor, a rash, a tightness. And some of those things you see actually happening, which is weird. And the reason I tell you this is because now people are paying full attention. Getting enlightened, well, yeah, that's nice if you can do that. Getting a jhana and understanding the Dhamma, oh, that's really good. But you'll find, in reality, it is a physical injury to you or something which is threatening your life. Just like a tumor or like a wound inside your body, like a heart condition. Then, that is something, unfortunately, more immediate. And you pay extra special attention. So how does that work? And how that works, you know, is that we learn how to focus. Oh, I should actually say this also, that, yeah, people say, yeah, it could be just coincidence or, you know, maybe a one-off or whatever, but is there any scientific evidence towards the interaction of the mind on the body and on things? And of course, there is. Heaps. There was, first of all, this gentleman who works at CERN, you know, the big atom smasher underneath Switzerland's mountains. And you know, he alerted me to the what's called the PEAR project, run by Princeton University, about how we could use the mind to influence random number generators. And then, more than that, it's been advanced since that time. Dr. Philip Radin, Dean Radin, R-A-D-I-N, was doing some stuff which was showing just the mind influencing the randomness of a, you know, the Young slit experiment. You know, two slits, and does see if you make an observation, then the you can get an interference pattern, or just the photon goes from one slit or another. Just a classic quantum experiment. And see if he could influence the distribution of quantum-generated random events. And the nice thing about that experiment was that it was done thousands and thousands of times in different countries at a distance, with every possible scientific control you could possibly imagine. And what really brought my attention, brought it to my attention, was that when they used meditators, people who train their mind just to focus, they found the standard deviation from the normal was about 5, I think, which was, you know, that is extraordinary. And apparently, that was it 3 or 4 standard deviations was enough in science to conclusively prove the existence of the Higgs boson, and people were awarded Nobel Prizes. So this is stuff which is proving that your mind can influence stuff. And especially when that is your stuff, when it is your body and your health and your safety and your well-being, can the mind actually do that? And so this is getting some very powerful proof. You know, from places like Princeton. This is not some dodgy university like Trump, was it Trump? I better not say that. University. This is, you know, really sort of prestigious places. So these places, you know, showing it can be done. So, if we focus, meditators had the best results. They also actually, as a control, they use artificial intelligence, trying to choose it. It was an Android system or something, so they could just choose by chance and compare that with human beings, and lastly with meditators. And meditators were just so powerful, being able to influence these random outcomes by just attention. By attention. So because as a meditator we train to sustain our attention, that's why it becomes powerful. So we start by sustaining our attention on the body, especially on parts of the body which are causing you problems and trouble. So what we do, we know them. And when you focus your attention on them, sometimes to influence them, we find out what influences those parts of our body. What makes our body warm if you're very cold in this room? You can focus on a part and just almost like imagine it's getting warmer and warmer and warmer. And see if it has any effect, sustaining your attention for long periods of time. And see what happens. If you're very hot, see if you can sustain your attention and just think, cold. All of these things can be done if you have enough, not say faith, confidence to give it a try and to do it long enough. But one of the best ways of learning this is when you are just meditating, you're sitting down, you know, you've got an ache here, a pain there, a little irritation, a cough or a sneeze or something, what do you do? And of course, the teaching last night, good old Emperor's Three Questions type of meditation. Now is the most important time. You've got a cough, you've got an ache, you've got a pain somewhere. Now, you know it, it's right in the moment. And next thing is, you give it importance. You don't sort of reject it. Never think of it as a hindrance to your meditation, as something to get rid of, unless, you know, it's being sort of, you know, almost life-threatening or you're going to get really, really sick. I mention that because sometimes people do take this way too far. Just like one of the first monks who went to England. This is what, not Ajahn Chah's monks. He went there beforehand. And he read in the suttas that in the cold months in India, the Buddha would actually meditate outside in the cold all night, just with his three robes and nothing else. And so this monk said, well, if the Buddha could do it, I could do this. So he went out onto Hampstead Heath in the snow. And he just had his three robes. And that's all, just sitting out there in the snow all night. Amazing, isn't it? Amazingly stupid. Because they had to take him to the hospital because he developed pneumonia. That is going too far. But we can actually get to know our bodies and get to feel it and understand it and know how to relax it. The more mindfulness and stillness you have, the more powerful it can get. If you really have deep meditation, you can feel your mind is very, very powerful. And the only way I can say you can like zap, you've got an ache in your knee, you just zap it, mindfulness down there, and just it goes. So if you do things like that, it just shows you some of the power of the mind. It's not belief anymore because it feels good. Or those great stories of people who are meditating with cancers. I remember good old George. I remember George because he was a good friend. He used to go to the Armadale group a lot. And it was George. He was a Cockney. I mean, just a real thick Cockney accent. And the monks over the road in Serpentine would always say that I was the only one who understood this fellow. I knew exactly what he was saying. But no one else could. A really thick Cockney accent. But he was a fellow who started coming to monastery in the Armadale group for meditation because, you know, he was brought up as a kid during the Second World War, and you know, he was just smoking like everybody else would do, cigarettes. And it was him who, you know, just happens that people who smoke a lot got lung cancer and nothing would work. And remember him telling the story, told it several times, so I can always know it verbatim. He said he went into this oncologist who told him, he had the x-ray, he said, look at this, George. The cancer was over both sides of the lungs. He said, it's impossible to do the usual surgery, you know, which is, you know, taking out the cancer part of your lungs, because it's everywhere. We'd have to take out, you know, all the lobes. So that can't be done. We can try chemotherapy, we can try radiation therapy, but in my experience, as best I know, it can only extend your life by maybe 2 or 3 months if you're lucky. But you know, we're willing to do that for you. And so George said what most people would say, I'll go home and think it over with my wife, talk it over. So he went back, talked it over with his wife and his family, and they came to the decision, you know, why go through all that treatment only to extend your life for such a short time? So he went back to the oncologist, you know, saying, just let nature take its course. You know, I'm ready to go, ready to die. No need for chemotherapy or radiation therapy. And as doctors do, that they insisted on giving him another x-ray first of all to find out how the disease had progressed. And that's when I remember George telling me the doctor was, you know, his face was half hidden by looking at the x-ray, but he could see his head was shaking backwards and forwards. And which George interpreted that he was in bigger trouble than he thought, that maybe he didn't have weeks, maybe only days. So George said, no, tell me, just tell me the truth. It's got worse, hasn't it? And that's when the doctor looked up and said, George, the reason I'm shaking my head is not because it's got worse, because it's all gone, it's disappeared. It's only about a week, or I could be wrong, 2 weeks, or I think about a week it was between the appointments. It's all gone. What the heck have you been doing? And that's when George said, meditating. Ah, yeah, carry on. And George lived for quite a long time. Whenever he saw the monks in Armadale, usually going over to the hardware store to get stuff for the building, he'd always come and say hello to them and just tell Brahm, George is still okay. He was a very nice chap. But it was a wonderful story, just how, you know, just in a week, something had happened. What? But anyway, the power of the mind to influence the body is great, which is one of the reasons why, if you have any feeling in the body, be aware of it. It is important. And how do you allow it to be healed? Calming the mind down. Not forcing it, because you know what force does? It makes it tense. It's never going to get still, you know, if you make it tense. That's not the way to solve problems. It's what causes problems. Just like I'm pushing my luck here again. Just like the fellow who went into the psychologist and said, I've got a big problem. What's your problem? Sometimes I think I'm a marquee. At other times, I think I'm a teepee. You know, one of the Indian tents, the wigwams. I said, I've never heard that's really strange, said the psychologist. Sometimes you think you're a wigwam. Sometimes you think you're a marquee. And then the light bulb came on in the psychologist's mind. He said, I know your symptoms. I know the disease. It's very common in today's world. You are too tense. Some of you are shaking your heads. Too tense. Anyway, that's a very stressful test. We still got that cartoon on the kitchen about the squirrel? Has someone taken that down now? About the squirrel who went into the psychologist's office and jumped on the couch. And the psychologist said, what are you doing here? And the squirrel replied, well, ever since I realized you are what you eat, I realized I was nuts. Oh, come on. Noble silence does not mean you can't laugh. Anyway, let's go back to being serious. But anyway, getting to know your body. So when you're meditating, you get to know how your body feels. And that's where we do like the body scan, from the toes to the feet, to the calves, the knees, the thighs, the butt, all up your body. I know that many people do the body scan in different ways, but I like doing it from the toes, because when I first start, mindfulness is not as strong as you know, when you've actually been doing it for a few minutes. So toes are pretty sort of benign. So when you actually, is there any disease of the toes which you can die from? Like cirrhosis of the toes, or a tumour on the toes, or nothing much you can do. They're pretty benign anyway. Just don't try to think of something. I'm sure there's something you can do. But anyway, as you sort of move up the body, up your legs, and past your knees, you actually get more and more aware of what's happening in those parts of the body. And when you get up to, you know, past your butt into your torso, and there's so many vital organs in there, and that's when you can start to feel them, really feel them. Your mindfulness is increased as you become more still, and as you start to be aware of those organs in your body, you can actually feel just whether they are balanced, whether they are healthy, whether they are. I don't know what you can actually say. The language, the vocabulary sometimes runs out. But you know that there is some affliction there, some imbalance, some tightness, some tension in those parts of your body. So, once you know it's there, you're aware, it's important, it's right in front of you, then what do? You care for it. It's a beautiful act of caring, which relaxes you. You know, sometimes you wonder about people, they call themselves snake whisperers or dog whisperers or was it horse whisperers, who can calm animals down. There are also this class of people called wife whisperers and husbands to calm people down. the boss whisperers. Wouldn't it be great to be a boss whisperer? So when your boss shouts, you can whisper, calm people down. But a lot of that idea of being able to calm another animal or a person down, use the same technique, you know, to calm your body down, to relax it, to get rid of its tightness, its tensions. Because that is what causes most of the diseases of our body, the tightness of the body. And if you can just focus on that part of the body, what mindfulness does afford you, give you, is what we call the feedback. Because when you're aware of something, you can actually see whether it gets worse or better or the same. You know that the feeling gets less balanced. It gets more painful, more tight. You can feel that. And you can also feel why it gets more relaxed, more peaceful, more at ease. You can know that. And of course, then you find out why. What's the cause of the body relaxing? What's the cause of the body getting tight and more painful? What causes that? Not physical, but the mental attitude. Literally, how you regard it. And you know what you're doing now? You're doing classic as a combination of first and second Satipatthana. Being aware that in Satipatthana, it's bad translations cause the rise and passing away of the experience, the Vedana. Now, rise and falling away. If you go deeper into the suttas, especially the Satipatthana Samyutta, there you start to see, what does it mean by rising and passing away, Udaya and Samudaya? It means that what causes it? And when that cause is taken away, why that feeling, that pain, starts to disappear. It's not just watching things come and go, just, you know, like a dummy. It's understanding why. Why these things occur. What makes them worse? What makes them be ameliorated, lessened? So you're watching your body, especially the feelings in the body, the pain, or the ache, or the tightness. And then you can feel, why does it get worse? Why does it get lessened? And you feel that, it's, you know what it is? Makes it less painful? Letting go. Letting it be. Relaxing. And so you know my current phrase now, relax to the max. I don't know why people laugh, because that's a powerful meditation technique. When people say, someone asked me recently, do you teach mantras? Mantras, buddho, buddho. Or, I will die, that's for sure. Mati, pasti. There's things much deeper than that. The relax to the max. On your own body. When you've got a tightness there, relax. To the max. And if you're mindful, you should be able to see the body relaxing, easing, being more free, less stretched, less tension. When you find your body like that, number one, it feels good, healing happens, and you become much more resilient. In today's world, the reason why people don't have resilience, why we have so, this is my theory, but I'm pretty sure it's valid. The reason why people get sick, they're so tense, so tight, that it's going to break sooner or later if I keep putting it like this. Fortunately, this is a new robe, so I'm pretty safe today. But if you keep putting it like this, it's going to break. The same as the old guitar string. You get a guitar string and you put it very tight. Really put the tension on it. And then, bing, something hits it or falls on it. And it makes a loud, high-pitched noise. You loosen the tension. And something hits it. Bing. It's a low-pitched noise. And you lessen the tension until that cello string is totally loose. And then things fall on it, it makes no sound at all. There's no tension on it. It has resilience. So this is what happens. When you relax your body, you're actually creating this softness, this lack of tension, which you feel in your body, which means you have resilience. And the biggest test of that is when somebody bangs the door and it doesn't echo in your mind. Or someone gets up at 1 o'clock in the morning in your cottage to make a cup of tea or coffee. And it's not just ordinary making, it's they've got to stir it up first of all. As they're stirring up their cup of coffee or tea or whatever. And it doesn't echo in your mind. Something has actually pinged, but you're so loose, it doesn't even affect you. That's what Ajahn Chah used to mean by, it's not the noise disturbs you, you disturb the noise. You're too tight, you're too tense. So learning how to relax the body, first of all, means whatever happens in this place, you tend to be resilient, even-minded. You don't react like you normally would. You're not like on a, what they call like on a short fuse. Someone says something, you just blow up. Which means it's a sign you're relaxing and letting go. And you can feel your body loosen up. And the nice thing which happens with the mindfulness of the body as you learn to relax, and not only does it feel healthy and free, it feels joyful. It was a surprise to me that just even as a monk, even as an old monk, that sometimes your body can feel just so light and free and joyful. It's the delight of a relaxed body. Because, you know, as a monk, when I first started practicing, you're almost like taught that this is supposed to be all about suffering. That, you know, if you're not really suffering, you're not really practicing. So, and it's actually true that there's many people, I'll tell you, don't mind, anecdotes, had stories you may not have heard before, but when I was preparing to be a monk, decided I'm going to renounce and go off to Thailand to become a monk, because the monks there were smiling more than anyone else I could find. And I went to the Thai temple. Well, they didn't like me at all over there. The reason was I was so keen, I would go every morning on my motorbike about sort of 6 o'clock in the morning. And when they weren't up, I'd knock on the door, wake them up, so I could do the morning chanting and meditation. I was so keen. And so they were very happy to see me go off to Thailand to become a monk. And they could have a sleep in the morning. But anyway, they're nice monks. But anyway, so when I would go over there, and where was I? Oh, yeah. And I saw some of my old friends and said, oh, you know, I want to go to Thailand and become a monk. Don't know where to go. And there was one fellow there. I said, oh, talk to that guy, because he'd just been to Thailand. He just ordained for a year and he'd just come back again. And I asked him, and you know who he ordained with? This man with Ajahn Chah. And he never said anything about Ajahn Chah. And I saw him about a year later after I became a monk. I said, hey, do you remember me? I saw you at Wat Buddha Badipa, the Thai temple in London. I asked you, where's a good place to go to become a monk? And you never told me about this place, Ajahn Chah, and you spent over a year here. And this man said, wow, I thought you were too happy, that you weren't serious about being a monk. I always remember that saying, as if you're happy, you don't need to go and ordain. It's opposite. The more happy. Just because you've got no toothache, doesn't mean you don't have to go and see the dentist for a checkup. Isn't that correct? I was happy even then. I became a monk to be happier. And the idea that practice means you must suffer and you must be tense and grim and you're not allowed to laugh, let alone tell jokes. To me, that is something terribly wrong with that attitude. Because what happens when you start to meditate, you just start to feel happy. Your body feels delightful. Just like, you know, I mentioned that I did have twice in my monk life, I've had a hot bath. The other time was when just one of the monks, his parents had come over to visit, and I was the monk's chaperone, and that they said, what do you want? They took us to the hotel room. We couldn't have anything to eat. It was past 12 o'clock. Do you want to eat this? And they said, do you want to see a movie? I said, we can't watch movies. And so one thing they did have in the hotel room was like, you know, the whole hot baths. Hadn't had a hot bath for about 2 or 3, 4 years. Just, you know, the old cold showers, you know, from the Ong Nam in Thailand, just throw it over yourself. And so, I can't see anything wrong with that. Video-wise, so that was one time we had a hot bath. And the other time was, again, when I was in Bhutan. So anyway, after you have a hot bath, how do you feel? So, so relaxed and joyful. And the whole body feels just so loose. And so sometimes you wondered, is there something wrong with that? Because with the bodily relaxation, especially with meditation, it's even deeper and more relaxing. And my body is really relaxed. It feels just so wonderful. It's delightful. And instead of being afraid of that delight, I decided to let's just hang out with that delight. See what happens. And the delight for the perception, the mindfulness of the delight of a relaxed body makes it even more relaxed. It was an interesting piece of insight. You're not afraid of the natural phenomenon of, it's not like sensual delight, it's just feeling everything is nice and easy. So that delightful bodily feeling made me far more relaxed and also far more healthy. Sometimes you could feel blockages. You know, sometimes people do jerks in meditation. What the heck is that? It's something you jerk. All it is just the release of a blockage somewhere in the body. But where it really gets interesting with bodily health, when you really get even past that relaxed body stage and you go into your mind and you can hardly feel the body, it's there, but it's just doing its thing and you're not really concerned. It's like you parked your car in the car park and you've locked it all up and you know it's pretty safe. You can't get a safer place like this. You know, the kangaroos are the only animals here, and even if they could open the door of your car, they wouldn't know how to drive. But if they did, you shouldn't tell because your car would be bumping up. So anyway, if you park your car, you're safe, you can let it go. And your body is relaxed, it's safe, you can let it go. And that's when these amazing things happen. Sometimes people get hot spots in their body. And the first time that started to happen, either to me or to other people, think, wow, this is weird. It's only one part of the body. Why is that part hot? You know, it's as against the rest of the body. And after a while, you don't reject that experience. It's important. You're kind to it and see what happens. What's going on? And all those times you find that part of the body which suddenly gets hot, you know, and abnormally hot, afterwards it feels so good. It feels like something has been released, that some energetic, positive influence has happened on that part of your body. And every time I've seen that over these years, it's always people have been very, very strongly healed. Sometimes because of whiplash, car accidents, all this other stuff of the body which we carry with us after many, many years after the injury is gone. We still have it in our body. And when we feel that part getting really warm, what it is the healing energies of the body could now move there safely. And so if that ever happens, wonderful. Or if, it only happens if you really let go, if you're peaceful and relax the body. And every now and again you see people like twisting around. And sometimes people moving around, almost in a circle. And sometimes you tell them afterwards, you say, you know you were moving. I said, no, I didn't know anything. To them, their body was perfectly still. Because they just weren't paying attention to their body, they were paying attention to their mind. And the body was just being allowed, whatever it is, to be able to release some ache or pain or some stuff which was happening in the body. So whenever those things happen, they are not forced. The only thing we usually do is try and control and stop those things happening because of fear. But instead of using fear, use this wonderful kindness and letting go, opening the door of your heart to this moment. It's happening, therefore it's important. And you're kind. You don't react to it. Except with this beautiful opening the door of your heart, watching this amazing body do whatever it needs to do. And see, wonderful things happen. And when you have, how was that? One day. Dimmy's not here today, but next time I see Dimmy, that she has this email somewhere. And you get these wonderful emails every now and again. This one email from this lady over in Eastern Europe, and she said that she had this arthritis in her wrists, which was so extreme that the only way to get through a day was with these really strong painkillers, which had terrible side effects. But she had to take and endure the side effects just to be able to, you know, to live. And then she came across the YouTube talks, and from those YouTube talks she learned this way of meditation, of being mindful, being aware and being kind in this moment. And she said, and the reason I say this because it just inspires me. These aren't my teachings, I got these from Ajahn Chah. Ajahn Chah got it from Ajahn Mun, Ajahn Mun got it from his teachers. So no one owns these, we just pass them down the line. But anyway, she said that she doesn't need to take painkillers anymore because the arthritis is totally gone. And then sometimes, you know how debilitating arthritis can be and how terribly, terribly painful and how destroying of a life. And if the painkillers are the only way, it's still not really having a full life, only maybe 5 or 10% of life. And there was someone who said it had all gone. She could live. And that was a wonderful thing, that this simple method of getting to know your body with the awareness and the kindness, you feel everything relaxing and relaxing and relaxing. Or if you can't go to sleep at night. Last night I had an interrupted sleep. Only reason was I had this new little clock which somebody gave me. And when I tried, of course, the alarm went at midnight. It wasn't adjusted properly. And I didn't know how to turn it off. When I did turn it off, so I went back to bed and realized it was on snooze. So it went up again.
it gets on doing that for about half an hour. I don't know what. But I had resilience. I did not throw it in the toilet and flush it away, which is, I thought about that. But then, so what you do, you just relax in the bed. Let go. It doesn't matter. You fall asleep, you don't fall asleep. Just be with this body, be kind to it. The door of my heart is open to you. And of course, then you wake up in the morning. So, learning how to relax your body, not be tight, not be afraid. In the moment, this is the most important time now. Whatever's in front of you, right at this moment, you're with it. And then just learning how to be kind. To be kind. And let things vanish and disappear. So you can have a beautiful, peaceful, healthy body. So that's actually just how we mindfulness of the body. And when we practice mindfulness of the body, getting to know our body, you find it's not that hard to do. When you say, watch your breath, well, I can only watch my breath for maybe 5 or 6 breaths, people say, then I wander off. But how long you can watch your body? It's much easier to watch your body because you're much more used to it. And it's more, please excuse me, more important to you at this moment. So you can be with your body, feel it, understand it, get to know it. And once you've trained on your body awareness, first of all, then afterwards, we can go on to things like the breath. And I always say the breath is like a stepping stone between the world of the body and the world of the mind. Because to let go of the body is difficult, all in one go. So from the body, feeling the body, relaxing it, we go off to our breathing, breathing in, breathing out. And that gets so soft and calm and peaceful that when that disappears, the only thing left is the mind. These beautiful nimittas which come up in the mind, which aren't that hard to see, but we do it the same way as our body. We get to know the experience, feel it. What makes it, especially if it's like a nimitta mind state, what makes it wobble? What makes it come and go? Why? When we know the causes of these things, we understand just how it works. We understand every time you try and reach out to grab something, that tightness and tension, that wanting, disturbs the stillness. Every time you try and force the breath, it vanishes from you. And just a little metaphor for that. If you are with a friend, if a friend tells you what to do and is always picking fault with you and telling you how stupid you are and telling you how just, how inconsiderate you are, how you are not caring for the environment, how you should do more, how you should... Does anyone like to be with people like that? If anyone tells you, oh, you shouldn't be drinking so much condensed milk, or you shouldn't be eating so much stuff, you shouldn't be doing this, and did you like being around people like that? I thought I'd get that in. So, learning how to be kind to your breath, not telling your breath what to do. And then you're friends with your breath. You're friends with your nimittas. In other words, you're not controlling. When you don't control, then you become really peaceful. When you become really peaceful, you know what real happiness is. And with that happiness, just as that mindfulness, the relaxation of the body creates great physical health. The relaxation of the mind creates great emotional health and peace and joy and wisdom. So that's how this whole thing works. But start off with your body,
feeling it, understanding it, getting to know it. And if you think you're an expert, that you know, that's where people always make mistakes, is when you know, we think you know, then you don't see anymore. When you assume you know the person you live with, then the relationship is dead. You assume too much. You only see what you expect to see. When you live with the closest person in your life, which is your own body and mind, if you think you fully understand it totally, just you're wrong. Always get to know new aspects of your body. Understanding how it works, how it feels, how to relax it, how to ease it, how to use it, how to care for it, and then how you can make use of your mind. And rest is a way of good health, physical and also emotional, and also the freedom of the mind, which leads to liberation. So, a little talk on body awareness. Da da da. Okay, so. That's not very good. Come, we can do better than that. Try again. Sadhu. 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 Still not good enough. You missed out something. Yeah, so over again. Sadhu. 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 Were you mindful of your body? What did that do to your body? When you did sadhu, 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 and he, he, he. How does it feel afterwards? This is where the mindfulness and the feedback, you get to know why I do this. Energy, happiness, joy, and even pretty good increase in health. So it's not just done for a joke. It's done for something much more important than that. Happiness, the joy, leads to deeper relaxation. Excellent. Okay, so now we have those who have chores to do, those who have more meditation, those who like to catch up a bit more on sleep. Don't feel guilty, I've been meditating for years. I'm a nun, I should go to sleep. A few people were yawning there. Please be kind to your body. And that old story, the lady from Sydney, when she came late, and I told her just, oh, go to bed. You know, and she followed my instructions. Just straight after the talk, she went to bed. She got up for lunch. After lunch, she went to bed. And I think she got up for the tea time. And then she went to bed afterwards. She never came to any talks or meditation. For 3 days, she just slept and slept and slept and slept. And she told me in the dormitory that her friends, they were looking at her as she's taking up a room or like a bed in the dormitory. Other people are much more motivated. And this girl, she just sleeps all the time. And she told me she thought she was getting so much ill will from her friends. I said, it wasn't ill will. It was just jealousy. They just wish they had the guts to do that. But that lady, 3 days, she just slept. Next 3 days, she came, you know, she was energized again. Started coming to the talks, getting up a bit earlier. And then the last 3 days, the star meditator. She really took off. Because she got the groundwork done. You don't sort of plant carrots, you know, without sort of digging the soil first of all and watering it and just draining it, whatever it needs. The preparations are really important. So if you need to take a break, take a rest, please do so. It's much better sleeping in bed than sleeping here. Okay, so off we go.
We've had sad already, so too many times.